Welcome to Making Our Way Forward, a podcast where we share compelling life stories and learn from the experience of everyday entrepreneurs. At NACI, we celebrate diversity and invite you to join the conversation as we talk to entrepreneurs and leaders from all walks of life. We hope that by telling their stories, we bring you inspiration, empower you to take action, and ignite entrepreneurship in your community. Welcome to the Making Our Way Forward podcast, and happy 4th of July to all of our listeners. We have people tuning in from over 300 cities across the United States and from nearly all continents around the world. So we appreciate you being here. We have a very special guest, a public servant, somebody who has a very interesting career, who does a lot for small businesses. So it is my pleasure to welcome Secretary of State for North Carolina, Elaine Marshall, to the program. So thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. Happy 4th of July, and I'm looking forward to this podcast. So thanks a lot.
Well, thank you. And our producer, Natalia Brezhna, and I had a chance to talk with you a couple of weeks ago, and it was a wonderful conversation. We were talking about it in the office, all of the interesting things that you've done, and you're quite the trailblazer. So for people like us, we are always looking to role models, people that not only lead with courage, but great integrity. So thank you for the service to our state and really to our country. And I'm one that believes that those things don't happen by accident. And you shared with us a bit about your background growing up in Maryland and some of those early memories. And I thought that would be a wonderful place to begin if you would share some of that with our audience.
I'd be happy to. Greetings, everybody. I did grow up in the state of Maryland. If you would have told me I'd spend my whole adult life in North Carolina, I'd have said, you're nuts. You know, I just didn't know anything about North Carolina. I had only been through there one time. But I ended up falling in love with a Tar Heel boy and came to North Carolina right after graduating from college. But my upbringing was in a small rural area outside of a very small town that didn't even have a stop sign. So that'll tell you the size. Everybody knew everybody. But we didn't know much in that community beyond, say, 20 miles from the family farm. My parents are very, very good people, but did not have much of a vision because they did not know much about the outside world. I give all credit to having good parents who allowed other folks to help guide them with me and the 4-H program. I was very active in 4-H. It taught a lot of leadership. But more importantly, it opened my eyes about how things in the world were different. We learned parliamentary procedure. We learned public speaking. We learned record keeping. 4-H is a program that is no longer limited to farm youth, but it is for all youth. And it's building life skills around a fun topic. It used to be cows and baking and sewing and that kind of stuff. But nowadays, it's bicycle safety, it's skateboard safety, it's rocketry, it's STEM, it's health and nutrition. It's all kinds of programs where kids can learn a lot and develop their personal skills that maybe they can turn into a job, a new innovation, a career. So I'm a strong believer in 4-H. I would have never gotten on a college campus, but for 4-H, never would have thought about going off to college. Some teachers encouraged that to my family, but without that outside encouragement, life would be very different for me. I also had an opportunity through 4-H to live in the country of Brazil for 7 months as an exchange student. That really opened my eyes to the struggles that a lot of people have and how we in America have opportunities, many opportunities that we don't take advantage of. Public school systems, health system, like the community college system, have so much to offer. And they're kind of one of the best kept secrets around the state and the world. When I talk to international businesses that are thinking about coming to North Carolina, I promote the community colleges because of the resources that they have, the curriculum programs they have for certificates, that somebody doesn't have to go for 2 years or longer. They can get that focused training. And for the second chance people, if you will, those who maybe didn't apply themselves or even get a high school degree, but also people that just didn't go on to any further education, but now realize and regret that they didn't. But the community colleges take those opportunities to a neighborhood near them, which is just wonderful. Dealing with international business recruitment, telling them that the community colleges are willing to train to their specifications is almost unbelievable to them. It's very hard for them to realize that that public asset is available. And so we have to take them to campuses and show them. Yeah, really.
Yeah, and really cherish that. And we had spoken about this a little bit earlier. The National Association for Community College Entrepreneurship, our organization that produces this podcast, chose the Raleigh area specifically because of a lot of the growth and the vibrancy here. But I think also things that are important to you about, you know, equity, inclusion, and diversity, and, you know, not just talking about it, but leading that. And I love what you said about community college. And I know you were a community college professor for a while, and we have a lot of following that way. So perhaps you could share with us a little bit about what did you teach there? I imagine your 4-H background kind of impacted the areas that you were interested in.
Clearly. My university degree is in textiles and clothing, so I'm a home ec major. But because of my 4-H background, I had skills in more than just textiles and clothing. I had food and nutrition, child rearing, you know, those kinds of things. So my first teaching experience was in the public schools of Lenoir County, where I taught home ec. Mm-hmm. That was a very eye-opening experience for a new bride coming to a different state. It's a fast dip way to learn about the culture and the area that you're living in. So I taught there for a little bit. Then I taught at the community college. There's a very big difference between being at the community college and being in the public school system. Every student I had at the community college was there because they wanted to be there. Mm-hmm. Sadly, that was not always true with the high school students that I had. I loved the community college environment. I taught tailoring. I taught what we called stretch and sew at the time. I taught a little bit of pattern making, you know, putting it in with the other courses, you know, and it was a great experience for me. I had some folks tell me that they told their families that my classes were always 3 hours. And so going to a class with me was better than going to the shrink because it was relaxation. It was good conversation. It was group therapy, sort of. I had students who were never, ever going to learn how to sew much. Some folks don't have the manual dexterity. They would have the drive, but they couldn't get the sequencing. They were spatially challenged, if you will. They had no vision. I had a lot of students, you know, you'd get a pattern. And if the pattern showed a green polka dot dress on the front, then that's what they bought. They had no idea how that design would look on them or how that design would look in another piece of fabric. So they were just visually challenged in that aspect. But I taught to everyone. The classes were not large. I had some that were outstanding folks that were willing to upgrade their skills. And with a small class, I was able to handle both those who found it difficult and those who only needed a little bit of inspiration and a little bit of guidance, and they could just run with it. So that was quite a rewarding experience to learn how to motivate different people at different levels in their skill sets or their attitudes about it. So I learned a lot about myself, and I learned a lot about people teaching in the community college system. I actually taught Lenoir Community, Johnson Community, and then Central Carolina Community College.
That's great. All excellent, excellent schools. And, you know, it strikes me too, you know, hearing you talk, those are a lot of really leadership skills, because it's trying to find out, you know, what people are good at. And, you know, I, full disclosure, was a fan of the wraparound skirt because I had trouble with zippers. I just, you know, probably one of those students like you talk about that had some of those challenges, but there was always a solution, especially if you have a good leader or a good teacher, and you really can accomplish a lot in a community. One of the areas that NACI has gotten very involved with is the maker movement. So making things through textiles. One of our principal collaborators who used to work in the White House, actually, for the Obama administration, that's her area. She looks at different things and how to create things and how to include people. So it's so interesting to see some of the things that you're talking about. But I want to fast forward because our time will go by pretty quickly. And I was reading about your bio and really, you know, you were a trailblazer, as we mentioned at the beginning of the program, running for public office. And I really admire that because it is not, you know, for the thin-skinned or the faint of heart. Certainly, you know, in states where you have, you know, local politics, state politics, things are going on. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about what led to that first decision and what office you ran for and what did you learn about yourself during that experience?
Well, I'd always been interested in politics. And again, it was due to 4-H. I enjoyed debate. I was actually the Maryland State 4-H president. So being a presiding officer was a skill that I had to develop in order to do that job. And so paying attention to the headlines. And one of the reasons I went to law school was because I felt that the laws were not fair and equitable to women. And so I went to law school and I represented a lot of women victims of domestic violence or troubled homes, troubled children, trying to counsel, because it is attorney and counselor at law, to counsel those folks to motivate them to change their lives or motivate them to help somebody else in their family situation communicate better or make incremental improvements. I guess I was kind of like a clinical psychologist without a degree to get behaviors to change just a little bit so that you could see success and then go on to the next step. Ran for an office a public office here in North Carolina that I didn't achieve. And you learn more from your losses almost than you do from your wins, no matter how painful they are. I was ill prepared for a runoff election. It looked like I had won the seat. But back then, you had to have over 50% of the vote. And if multiple candidates were in the primary, you know, the second place finisher could call for a runoff. And you had to have that in 30 days. I was ill prepared for that second, didn't have any money. People don't pay attention to it. People thought they saw me months later and said, how are you enjoying being in the North Carolina General Assembly? And the answer was, well, I'm not there because I didn't win the runoff. you know, but I stuck with it. I knew that I had something to give. Then after redistricting, which is often an opportunity for women, there was a Senate seat that was carved out of a multi-district. We were in a district with Wake County, the most populous county in the state. The people from the more rural districts didn't stand a chance because if the people voted for their home folks, we didn't stand a chance. So once it became a single member district, it looked like it was a good opportunity for me. It was about 4 or 6 years after the first experience. And I had a primary and then there was a runoff called, but it was a 40% threshold. Wait a minute, I did not have a runoff in that one, which was my goal. I didn't want somebody to say, you know, she only got it because she was a woman and, you know, this runoff stuff and what have you. I wanted to win it outright, and I did. And I served in the North Carolina Senate. And then there came an opening for Secretary of State, and there was a concerted effort. The North Carolina Democratic Party had never nominated a woman for an executive statewide office. And they vetted a couple of us, and it ended up being a 6-person primary, 4 women and 2 men, which again, I won, but I led. But then there was a second place finisher who called for a runoff, and I won that handily. So then I had to run against Richard Petty for the office in a state like North Carolina. That still goes down in the history books as one of the most interesting races ever. And it wasn't even a close race, I will tell you. So I'm very pleased about that. And I've been Secretary of State ever since. So the lessons you learned from the campaign are, the lessons I personally learned is, don't respond to the very first reporter that asks you about an issue because you may not know all the facts. You know, that's, and that bothers me to this day. People will rush to the scene of some cause or something and stick a microphone, and you don't know all the facts. You don't know enough to make an informed decision. And then when you kind of decline to answer, it's like you're not strong enough or bold enough to answer, when the truth is that public policy deserves a good analysis of the facts, no matter what the issue is. Second, I have learned that has changed across the year is the partisanship. It wasn't that way when I started. It was not as overt. It was not as hard to deal with. I see talented people, women in particular, that I encourage to get into politics, and they are not interested. They are not interested in facing that kind of stuff. I just think we really need to encourage more good people to get into politics who are willing to debate the issues, but not throw all these bombs that people throw and gotchas that they try to get you in, and polarization that seems to be the coin of the realm these days over, you know, social issues.
There's a lot that you said, a lot of wisdom there. And it strikes me that really the entrepreneurial process, I love how you shared about your failure. I'm a big believer in that as well. You go through processes and you learn more about yourself, I think, through those. Then sometimes things come too easy and you don't really do that deep reflection. But one of the guests that we interviewed several episodes ago, Renee Johnson, used to travel around the country with Michelle Obama when the Obama administration was in office, and they encouraged women to run for office. And it's interesting because she shared, much of your own experience is that was the reason that people would not run, but, you know, having women kind of stick together and support one another is one of the initiatives that we have here in higher education, because it can be, I imagine at times, Secretary Marshall, it can be a lonely experience, sitting where you're sitting, because, you know,
I was the first elected, I was the only woman at the highest, most important, prestigious table of discussion in the state, that being the Council of State. Now, since then and continuing to today, I do have colleagues. We are not of one mind. We have been of different political parties. But I think having the woman's perspective, whatever that might be, the woman's voice at the table is very, very important. There is research that shows that while there can be men who are very supportive of women's issues, that the women legislators themselves tend to put a higher priority on that very good family-related issue or childcare issue or child development issue or healthcare issue than a male counterpart. We establish our priorities based upon our life experiences.
That's right. That's right. And I know another interesting thing in terms of opportunity and challenge we were speaking about a few weeks ago, the record number of new businesses that were created in the state of North Carolina during the pandemic. And what's interesting about that is it presents a lot of challenges for you, because you're running your office, but the office was closed down. And I'd love it if you could share a bit about, obviously the Secretary of State for the entire state, how do you deal with that? Because you had some interesting kind of workarounds to make sure that the citizens of the state were served.
You know, we were physically closed down, but we certainly were on the job being productive. And I am so proud of my folks. Since June of 2020, all of a sudden we saw the business filings just blow up. I thought they might slow down, but the opposite was true. They accelerated. For calendar year 2021, we are already 75% of last year's total just in the first 6 months of this year. We are having a record-breaking month after month after month. It is unbelievable. As of yesterday, June 28th, Citizens created more than 93,500 new businesses since January. That is almost double what we did in that same time period in 2020 and 2019. To give you an additional perspective, in the first 6 months of this year, we have surpassed the 12-month total for every year except 2019 and 2020. We will beat last year's record-breaking volume by late July or perhaps the first week of August. That's what we're looking at to equalize. Now, my staff, we did a lot of overtime. We did a lot of reinstatements for people to be able to get their PPP paperwork processed and get their money. But the innovative spirit is alive and well. Since we've experienced this, our document examiners have worked overtime. We asked some retired folks if they would come back and help, and they were delighted to be of service. I mean, my folks are truly public servants. They know what they do is so important for that business process to start, for people to develop a company, for people to get investors, or if they've got a patent or an innovative idea, for them to take off. We're where business begins. We're the maternity ward for business, whether it's a corporation or a limited liability company or one of those other alphabet soup partnership professional, this, that, and the other. There's a variety of those. But we are seeing entrepreneurship take off. The information that has to be filed with us is very limited. It's very general. It's very broad. And we thought, you know, we need to know more about this. What happened to this? The phenomenon took off in June of last year, started in May and June, and we wanted to know 1 year from their filing, what is their status? So we are in the process of surveying the people who started new entities in May, June, and we'll be doing July as it comes up to find out, are they still alive and well? Have they got employees? Have they had revenues? We've given them category searches from over 25,000 and on up. And I can tell you that we have several over in the month of June that have already replied that have earnings of revenues of over $1 million. And we have a lot that have employed other people, which frequently is a surprise. We know nationally that a lot of these new enterprises are being started by women. And women tend to run businesses that they themselves are the only employee. Women will start businesses because they're tired of working for somebody else and they want more control over their life and their destiny because of school issues, childcare issues, dependent health care, whether it's parents or children. So we are just in the beginning of this survey. It's very, very preliminary. But the trends are very, very interesting. Most of them are still in business. I think it's about 75%. I'm just excited to know that we're going to be getting more data on what's been happening out there. What really surprised me on this was one of the questions that we ask is, did you start this business out of necessity for lost job or for you saw an opportunity? And about 75% are saying it was not because they lost a job. It was because they saw an opportunity to fill a gap, provide a service, create a product, whatever it might be. So we're looking forward to having more data. And
yeah, I love that. That is part of your leadership style, is really kind of going where the information takes you. And it's interesting to us too, and I may have mentioned this to you before, and some of our listeners know this, is NACI has been helping the SBA think through some of these trends. And there is something in the U.S. Senate chaired by Senator Klobuchar out of Minnesota and Senator Tim Scott, the Entrepreneurship Caucus. And it was formed, interestingly enough, when there was not this surge of newly created businesses. So as you stated, all of that has changed. And I think the data, what you're collecting, is not only going to help the state of North Carolina, but could very well help nationally, you know, develop a strategy of how might other states really follow the example of what you learn and maybe do some similar fact checking and try to figure out how can we use all the resources at our disposal in the best way to help communities succeed, even rural ones, like where we started this conversation, because entrepreneurship, as you had mentioned before, is really important to rural communities.
If we can get the broadband that we need in this state with the money that's coming from various relief acts, I think the entrepreneurship elevator is only going to go higher and higher and higher. We need it for existing businesses to compete in the global economy. We need it for entrepreneurs to see that they have an opportunity to be in, I don't know, Eden, North Carolina, and still have a livelihood that they can do right there in that community, and maybe even provide some other jobs in that community to sell a product or to do something. But we've got to have reliable broadband. And then you add on to that the need for education and telemedicine. We've just got to have it. And there is adequate money out there to get it. And so the General Assembly needs to be very, very smart, very, very resourceful, very, very compassionate. Make sure that they understand that it is needed everywhere and that the problems with broadband in the East are very different from the problems with the broadband in the West. The East, you know, you don't have the geographical challenges that you have with the high places and the low places, the mountain ridges in the West. So I'm very sensitive to the differences. It's not a one size fits all. So that means the General Assembly's got to be very, very thoughtful about the programs and their expenditures.
Well, I think you are just a wonderful advocate just for every person in our state. I'm so grateful for your service. I've learned so much today, even more so than I knew about 4-H before, and excited about the future. I think with people like you, not only leading, but setting the example for other people, that's what we try to do in our organization and on this program, is help people make their way forward. So thank you, Secretary Marshall. If there's any final thought that you wanted to leave with us, we would love to just close out with that.
Well, it's just that I truly, truly appreciate the entrepreneurial spirit. I was a decorator. I didn't teach school forever and forever. I did other activities even before becoming a lawyer. I've been in retail. So I do know the personal ups and downs, and I hope that people will persevere. The economy right now is still fragile, but it is in a growth mode. We are very fortunate to be here in North Carolina with major companies making major announcements for great jobs here in this state. And there will be a lot of spinoffs, a lot of supply chain. So people need to put their thinking cap on and look at the skill set they have. And if they want to work for themselves or they want to have other people in their organization, I can't think of a better time than ever. Interest rates are low, opportunities are high. So just work on a business plan. That's always a problem for some folks. They've got enthusiasm about something, but you got to work through the financial part of it, short range, long term, marketing. It doesn't happen naturally. Go to somewhere where you can get help. Community college is one very excellent place. Also, some of the chambers of commerce put on seminars that are short that give you marketing ideas and what have you. And if you don't have it in your community, push for it. There are those of us that can provide some skills and will come out. We have been doing it through Zoom, but hopefully we can come out and do it in person, which is a lot more fun. So we want to be of assistance. We want to be of assistance. So you just have to call on us.
Most certainly are. And thank you so much for sharing your story. And I encourage people, like you said, to visit your local community college. Wake Tech is just one of many, many wonderful institutions. So
I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that you can reach us online at sosnc.gov. We get very high marks for the tutorials, for the business explanations, the forms that are up there. And our call center and email center, if you need customer service, communicate with them. We have tutorials, YouTube things about how to do stuff. So it isn't a mystery. And just walk through it with us. We'll walk with you.
That's great.
SOSNC.gov.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. We hope that listening to this podcast will help you to explore the many ways we might define entrepreneurship. Join us every other Wednesday for more episodes as we celebrate opportunity, learn from one another, and grow together. Subscribe to this podcast, connect with us on social media, and learn more about today's speakers at nacy.com/podcast. We look forward to making our way forward together with you.
Have you heard about our latest book, Impact Ed, How Community College Entrepreneurship Creates Equity and Prosperity? This is our roadmap for building back better in 50 states and globally. In each chapter, we share the inspiring stories of everyday entrepreneurs and explain how community colleges play a crucial role in their success. Visit us at nacy.com/impacted to order your copy now and join us in this work.
Join us on July 20th in Chattanooga, Tennessee for a pre-conference leadership workshop featuring podcast hosts and NACI leaders Jeff and Becky. Hosted in partnership with EntreEd's Master Teacher Certification, this two-part workshop is ideal for faculty members, administrators, presidents, and leaders in your institution. Participate in a Presidents for Entrepreneurship pledge signing during the provided lunch. Get more information and save your seat at NACI.com or the link in this episode's description.
Have you heard the exciting news? NACI recently released a new publication titled The NACI Playbook, Volume 1, all about how entrepreneurial mindset sets the new standard for success in communities and colleges. The NACI Playbook digs into entrepreneurial mindset and how practicing leadership with this framework creates an agile culture with space to innovate, co-create, fail forward, and accelerate growth. Entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial leadership require us to lean in, anticipate and recognize trends, manage change, be resilient, take risks, reflect, and rest in the knowledge that anything is possible. Learn from our innovative, insightful, generous network who navigates both challenges and opportunities entrepreneurially as we share what we've learned and how you might apply their experience to your work. We hope you'll be as inspired as we were. Learn more at www.nacyplaybook.com.